Welcome to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs Podcast. My name is Fergal Byrne. Every week, I talk to inspiring social entrepreneurs and changemakers dedicated to building a better world. Here, they tell their stories, the highs and the lows, and share what they have learned to help other social entrepreneurs and changemakers on their journey.
Most of our foundations support Mobile for Good projects, mainly because that's our business. We do mobile vests, so that's what we support through our projects to try to make the world a better place. Our function is to be able to move the needle for social impact. So in the same token, if our funds could help the project move a little bit further and get that much closer to market to help people and make lives easier for them, that's really our main duty.
I'm very pleased today to be speaking to Jane Sugiyama, director of the Vodafone Americas Foundation. June has developed the Vodafone Americas Foundation Wireless Innovation Project, a competition designed to seek the best wireless technology solutions to address critical social issues around the world. Over the last 6 years, the Wireless Innovation Project has awarded nearly $3 million to not-for-profit, non-governmental organizations and universities supporting a spectrum of high-potential mobile and wireless technology solutions.
Thank you very much for taking the time to speak to Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs. It's great to have an opportunity to talk to you today and learn more about the activities of Vodafone Americas Foundation and some of the exciting initiatives that you're pursuing to help fund social innovation. Can you tell me a little bit about the Vodafone Americas Foundation, just to begin with, and what your aspirations are in general?
So I'm the director of Vodafone Americas Foundation, located in the United States, in California, to be precise, near Silicon Valley. Vodafone is a little bit different than a lot of larger corporations that provide funding or that do foundation work. Vodafone worldwide has 27 foundations, and that's quite different than most of the larger corporate models. Larger companies like, let's say, Coca-Cola or some of the pharmaceutical companies that do foundation work usually provide funds through their headquarters out of their marketing arm or their business unit. But the Vodafone has 27 independent foundations with their own bylaws and board of directors, and rightly so, because the issues that we all face are different from country to country, and how we can support them are different from country to country. So I think it's a very good model for us. That said, most of our foundations support Mobile for Good projects, mainly because that's our business. We do mobile vests, and so that's what we support through our projects to try to make the world a better place.
Great. That sounds great. Exciting.
And here in the United States, we run the Vodafone Americas Foundation. And the business side will be launching a U.S. business. We've just launched a U.S. business shortly, but the foundation has been in operation ever since Vodafone came into the United States, which is about the year 2000. Aside from the regular grant-making funding we provide, we run a very large project called the Wireless Innovation Project. It's a competition to find the best wireless innovation to make social impact. And that's been our signature program up to now, and that's what we're talking about today, if that's okay with you.
Excellent, excellent. So how would you characterize the state of innovation, really, in wireless? How has that been evolving? I mean, wireless has been around for a while, and technology continues to evolve at a pretty rapid pace. Can you maybe just give me a kind of a snapshot of what you see in that space? Yeah.
Sure. Technology has been evolving incredibly as far as the technology itself is concerned, as you know, from the, feature phones all the way to the smartphones and the iPhones that we have now. But if you look at the developing world, it's advanced. I mean, I don't think there's a way to describe how much it's advanced. you know, mobile phones are on all corners of the world, in some of the desolate areas as well. And it's really bloomed and blossomed, especially when you're talking about something like mobile money or providing healthcare through mobile. Collection especially.
Yes, I did interviews earlier with Zuna and the Prickled Foundation in South Africa earlier in this series, and they're doing some amazing work really in both of those areas, health and money transfer.
Right. So when you look at technology like that in developing countries, almost reverse engineering from developing countries to developed countries. You know, like if you look at the United States, we're way behind when it comes to mobile money or like using mobile for healthcare. And, you know, I guess good reason. I mean, we do have some embedded infrastructure that's really hard to break through, as well as some good infrastructure that's there for, you know, regulation and laws to make sure everybody stays healthy and the businesses run correctly.
And so how does the prize work? I mean, I know it's the X Prize. That's a very high-profile initiative that has seemed to have been very successful raising money for various science projects. What is it about a prize, do you think, that lends itself to very good projects and to fundraising?
A couple of reasons. You know, we're a foundation. Although there's a corporate name associated, we're still a foundation, a nonprofit organization. And so I just want to assure everybody that that's what we are. We're not a VC. We're not looking to acquire companies. As a matter of fact, you know, out of the innovations that have won, we don't touch the IP. We don't sit on their board. That's not why we're here. We don't have an endless bit of money, and we don't have the time or the manpower to sit on board. That's not our function. Our function is to be able to move the needle for social impact. So in the same token, if our funds could help the project move a little bit further and get that much closer to market to help people and make lives easier for them, that's really our main duty. And so the amount of money is fairly significant. The first prize winner is $300,000 over 3 years. Second prize is $200,000 over 3 years. And third is $100,000 over 3 years. And I think, if we may say so ourselves, we have been really good in identifying projects that are at that critical point where they need that kind of money to push them forward to the next stage. We have a particular point in time of projects that we're looking for, either late-stage research, prototype, or testing, because we feel that's the critical point and juncture that they can use a certain amount of funds to be able to move to the next step.
All right, that's very interesting. What kind of funding might they have had up to that stage, and what happens when they reach that stage generally? I know each case is distinct probably, but any general insights?
You know, we're not a VC, so we're not able to support something from conception stage all the way to marketing.
Yes, surely.
So most of these people have received funds. If they were universities, they've, you know, received university funds, some grants. If they were NGOs, certainly they've worked with other NGOs and partnered and collaborated and received grants from government. So they're at the stage where they're about to prove themselves, where they've proved themselves and they're ready to scale. So I think that's where, you know, our money has really made an impact.
Right, that's very interesting, because scaling is such an important dimension. I mean, do you distinguish between for-profit or not-for-profit, or have you any observations on how the landscape is there in terms of, while it's for good, but I guess it's a pretty wide-ranging sector generally, the whole social entrepreneurship, different structures, different forms, and so forth?
We are a foundation, so we're a worldwide nonprofit organization here in the United States. So we can provide to quasi nonprofits, but we really try to make it easier on ourselves to support only nonprofit organizations. So if they are from a university or if they are an NGO, that's easy enough for us to fund them directly. Otherwise, if they are startups or if they are commercial, they usually have a nonprofit partner. For example, we have one innovation winner, Mobile ODP, which is a cervical cancer detection a tool off of the smartphone. They are a commercial entity, but they have a huge project with a partnership with a clinic in Mexico. And so we fund their project that way. We have NGOs, we have startups, a whole variety.
Right, that's interesting. You may not have a perspective on this, but I'm just wondering, do you have a sense of the growing role of foundations generally in funding social innovation? You know, as you know, I spoke to Jane Chen of Embrace, and they have, you know, a non-profit and a profit arm, and she talked about, yeah, you know, the importance and the crucial value of foundations in funding their work. Do you have any insights into that generally, and also which is more or less appropriate, you know, under what circumstances? It's a big area, but any thoughts on that?
Sure. I actually have a strong opinion on that, and I feel that philanthropy plays a very big and important role. Of course, there's a lot of different schools of thought in this. You know, philanthropy shouldn't be funding anything that's revenue-driven or you know, has fees associated with it. But, you know, when you think about it, philanthropy money is very, very different from commercial money. I mean, you know, foundation money, we don't have shareholders. We don't have to look for the bottom line and revenues. I mean, we are not there for the dollar's sake. That said, that doesn't mean that a foundation does not do their due diligence and fund whatever they like. You know, we do their due diligence. We do investigation. We look at financial models, business plans. I think philanthropy has a great role to play for the incubators. I don't mean to fund startups directly or businesses directly, but certainly the fertile ground to support new businesses to start, to create entrepreneurship, to assist them and to nurture them. You know, those grounds are where I think philanthropy can play a very, very big role. And you know, there are many nonprofits that have a fee-for-service model, revenue-generating to be self-sustaining. And then there are also a lot of nonprofits around there that are acting as incubators and supporting startups. We, for one, have partnered with a local impact hub in Oakland to sponsor a startup school. Because we felt that a lot of startups have different gaps, small ones and large ones, and if we can assist them in any way to talk about business plan, presentation skills, the different roles of funding and different styles of funding, you know, those are all the basics that startups need to know. And there are nonprofit like I mentioned before, incubation hubs like Tamil and several others skip me, but they're popping up right and left. And I think it's a very good model, and it's needed.
That sounds very interesting, the educational and support side. So this surprise, and clearly the quality of the technology and its likely impact and its viability and so forth are important. And maybe we can talk about that at some point. But what about the teams and their, I guess, commercial sensibilities, their capabilities to build a business, and also, in the first instance, to present a project and to raise money from a foundation? Many social entrepreneurs, I suppose, are less familiar with that funding. What are some of your insights and maybe advice for social entrepreneurs who would be looking for that kind of funding?
Sure. That, I'm so glad that you're touching this area because, you know, the foundation funding is a mystery to a lot of people, not only to social entrepreneurs. And so, you know, our competition is run firstly through an application that's online so that we can make sure all of the criteria are met, the basic criteria that they have. They are either a nonprofit or have partnership with a nonprofit. It's a mobile solution. It's scalable, sustainable, things like that. But then thereafter, the finalists are selected, and they must appear in person in front of a panel of judges. And the judges come from all backgrounds, whether there are business people from Vodafone itself, hub incubators, social entrepreneurs themselves, or journalists. And some of them are area expertise. But the reason we have them come and appear in person is because that team, the cohesiveness, has to be seen in front of our eyes, and the passion that they have for the people they are helping, the passion they have for their project, have to show through. And then most importantly, that they are engaging, because if they're not able to engage with the audience, they're not able to engage with future funders. And, you know, we want to make sure we pick a project that has some sort of hope and insight in the future. So we have them come in person. We try to identify indeed that they have passion. They know their constituents, and they have seen or related to the issue that they're dealing with firsthand. And so, you know, that's the number one thing that I recommend, that they develop the ease within themselves to be able to talk about the subject and to talk about their project. And definitely a business plan. A business plan as in not necessarily revenue generating yet, but a strategy that's developed to of how to reach market is within the whole package. And if you don't have that talent yourself, well, then go find somebody. Go find a consultant. Go, if you're in campus, go across the hall and get somebody from the business department to help you. We look for teams that are cross-collaborative, cross-disciplinary. Single subject is usually not a way to be able to reach market. You're not an expertise, but just, you're not an expert by just knowing that one thing. You need expertise from a group of people to be able to run a viable project, a viable business. So, you know, the people who reach us in our competition aren't necessarily at that business point, but certainly they have to have an eye on the future and how they would reach market. So that would really be the most important for us.
Yes, that's very interesting. So when you talk about engagement, what does that look like when they engage with you and funders? I mean, clearly passion, the business itself has to be thought out, I suppose, and be viable. Are there other qualities of this engagement that are distinctive of the, some of the entrepreneurs, social entrepreneurs you've met?
Yeah, so it could be something as simple as meeting a person's eye. You know, just the contact, being able to speak to individuals as well as all together to a group. I mean, some things that are just that simple is, you know, could be that important. So when they come here in person, you know, we look for their organization skills to make sure that they know, you know, how to transit from one stage of their presentation to the next. Just like you're speaking and conversing with somebody, that you have an ease within yourself to be able to talk about your project. But just a personal aspect, I think is very, very important. And that's what we found was really missing in the very, very beginning through our foundation when we were, just to backtrack, how we started this wireless innovation project, this competition, was that we were very frustrated with the basic funding model to universities providing scholarships. We found that there were a lot of research projects that have been in the basement for 10 years, which would have been and could have really helped people and made their lives easier and really changed the world, but they intended to research it 10 more years, and that they didn't involve their constituents, and it wasn't cross-disciplinary, and they didn't have a strategy or model to make that product available to the people outside of their labs. And so that's why we created this competition, to be able to target in and find exactly what we're looking for, and then provide the funds to be able to push it that much more quickly to market.
Right. That's it.
Yeah. The component that we're looking for.
Would you say that if you were to pinpoint an area where some social entrepreneurs could do better, it is this question of communication and being able to engage with funders?
Yeah, I mean, to be able to relay your story easily, and then that's another thing, to be able to have a story, a human story associated with your project or product is very important.
Yeah, absolutely. The statistics don't really do it. You know, the personal, the insights into real people and their lives being changed clearly is so much more powerful. I understand that this year you've got your finalists already, and you're going to be in June, I think, announcing the winner. What does it look like this year, the finalists?
Well, I can't announce the winners yet, but the finalists are fantastic. It's a great crowd. The interesting thing about all of our winners so far that we really didn't even set out to look for, that we found that they all have in common, are a couple of things. One is that they have gone beyond their product, just their product itself. So they did not stay complacent with the fact that they just finished their product and that it's good enough to use. That they've gone beyond that to continue to refine, continue to adapt, and continue to find other ways to use their product. And then the second thing that I found about all of our winners so far and our finalists is that they've all found ways to utilize the data that they get from their products or their solution. So they either aggregate it to refine their product even more, they get the data and they distribute it to other people in the field so that others can collaborate together and find better ways to do things and help, or maybe even find ways to collect that data to be able to sell it so that indeed they can have a sustainable a model. So I think those are the two things that I was really surprised to find with all of our winners and all of our finals. What I'm finding with a lot of things that have been coming in are monitoring devices, and then finding that monitoring itself is not good enough. If you're monitoring, what's the result of what you've monitored? So is it repairs that you need? Is it deployment that you need to do? So they've gone the next step and attach solutions upon solutions in mobile. If you look at mobile solutions right now, I think we need to concentrate a lot more on energy, the battery, renewable batteries, re-energizing batteries, energy source, access to network. And I believe, sooner sooner than later, I think smartphones will be proliferating even the developing countries too. So people are coming up with solutions for smartphones as well in developing countries.
Excellent. So how many competitors would you have, or people would you have in a year looking for funding? And what should aspiring social entrepreneurs with wireless innovation projects do in order to be part of this?
We usually have about 100 applicants per year. I mean, certainly we would like more. And we end up with 8 finalists. And out of the 8 finalists, we choose 3 winners. Which we support over the 3 years. But, you know, beyond the 3 years, we've continued relationships with all of them. And probably more than half have gone on to reach market, have gone on to get more and more funding, more and more awards. I think 4 or 5 of them have won the Gates Challenge. So they've all gotten significant funding. 2 of them have been picked up by VCs. So, you know, if they can keep an eye on our website, and certainly there's lots of other funding available if they join meetings that happen all around the world for social entrepreneurship and social innovation in the West Coast. SOCAP, for one, that's a really fun, great conference that happens for social entrepreneurs. Associate with your local hubs. Look for, you know, both for-profit and non-profit incubators. Our competition usually opens in the fall. Everybody is welcome to apply, and that's really our main duty.
Right. That's very interesting. Thank you. Thank you very much, June, for taking the time to speaking to Aspiring Social Entrepreneurs, and I wish you the very best of success with the continuing work of the Foundation.
Thank you for listening to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneur podcast. I hope you found this interview inspiring. Please make sure to visit www.inspiringsocialentrepreneurs.com and subscribe to make sure you don't miss any future podcasts.